You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Diacetyl is a flavoring chemical used to give buttery notes to everything from popcorn to candy to chips and even coffee. Although the FDA has approved it to be eaten in trace amounts, the yellow liquid is particularly destructive to the lungs if it's inhaled. It has posed risks to workers in flavoring and food manufacturers for years, and new questions are being raised about why the chemical is now being used to flavor e-cigarettes, which are inhaled. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Raquel Rutledge has been following the story for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Her article is called Gasping for Action, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Doesn't diacetyl occur naturally in some foods at low levels?
It does. It is the byproduct of fermentation. So it is in beer, and it is in wine, and it actually occurs naturally when you roast coffee beans, even that aren't flavored.
When did it become a common food flavor additive?
Gosh, it's been around since back to the 50s. It's sort of grandfathered in through the FDA's GRAS, or generally recognized as safe way of getting into the food supply. And it became really evident that it was problematic in the early 2000s when microwave popcorn workers started coming down with this dreadful lung disease called bronchiolitis obliterans. There were many cases of that. And so that's when you heard about it being, you heard efforts were made to have it regulated back then. Calls, public health experts were calling on OSHA to set some limits of exposure in the workplace, at least, back in 2006, 2007. Those never manifested themselves.
So tell us about bronchiolitis obliterans. What is it, and what happens to the lungs?
What it does is, so a chemical like diacetyl will get into the lungs and just destroy the bronchiolitis, the bronchioles, the lungs' tiniest airways, and it just attacks them. And then as a response in trying to heal, the body creates scar tissue, and that scar tissue builds up and blocks the airways. And so it's irreversible. There is nothing that will make it any better.
And it's also been called popcorn lung because originally was seen with people who worked on popcorn, or at least microwave popcorn?
Yep, that's right. I mean, there were cases that surfaced earlier, but they weren't able to link it with diacetyl. There were a couple of people that worked in a bakery plant that were identified back in 1985 that came down with bronchiolitis obliterans. But it was not until the CDC, until 2000, 2001, when the CDC and the research arm of CDC, NIOSH, started linking the chemical with the disease. And here we are in 2015, and you still got the chemical out there. And now we have coffee roasters coming down with the same disease. Five coffee roasters in one plant in Texas, two of whom were, one of whom was on the lung transplant list. The other one is significantly ill as well.
Do people die from this?
They do. They do. Yeah, there was a 29-year-old who died from it in the early to mid-90s, yeah. Yeah, and the thing about it, too, it's interesting, is it's not one of those diseases that takes many years to develop. Some of the workers had been working in the plants for less than 2 years, 18 months, and just so it acts quickly. It attacks the lungs very fast.
You wrote about two food manufacturers in New York where diacetyl was found in the air. What happened to them, to the workers in those facilities?
Are you talking about the cream cheese manufacturer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have the disease. So the thing about it is...
This is cream cheese manufacturers?
Yeah, so it's dairy. It's also used, diacetyl is used in the dairy business quite frequently. So that was of interest to us here in Wisconsin. We're a big dairy state and a big beer state where it's also in beer. But so it's used to flavor cream cheeses. There are things that they can do in the workplace to limit exposure to it, such as proper ventilation, making sure when you're transferring diacetyl that you're doing it in an enclosed manner, so you're not having open containers being heated up where you're breathing in. And then the last resort is to wear personal protective gear, which respirators, which workers don't like to do. They're heavy, they're cumbersome, they're hot. Often they don't fit right. You know, if you've got any facial hair, if you don't have a proper fitting, and a lot of times they're not actually strong enough. The cartridges aren't strong enough to take the diastole out of the air. So that's the last resort. But you've got workers that, you know, don't want to deal with that, and you've got employers that haven't taken the proper precautions with the ventilation and the enclosures. And so you still have quite a bit of people out in the workforce that are being exposed to it. And then you have the surveillance problem, which is, you know, occupational health, the CDC doesn't, it's not a reportable disease. So you don't, it's very easy to miss it and to overlook it. So the public health experts think there is an epidemic on the horizon with this.
Now, what happens when one of these people goes to a doctor? Would the doctor immediately say, oh, it's diacetyl poisoning, or would they say, looks like asthma to me?
Yeah, most often they say it looks like asthma. Some are familiar with it. They've heard about it from the popcorn workers, but I think a lot expect that it's been resolved, that the diacetyl has been taken out of the supply, which it hasn't. It's been reduced, but it's still widely used, and its substitutes are being used now, and those have been found in animal studies to be equally as toxic. But no, most often doctors will say you've got bronchitis, so you've got asthma, and if they don't ask the occupational question, where you work and what you're working with, it's very often overlooked, and there's a lot of incentives for them not to actually ask, I'm told, that they don't necessarily want to get involved in worker comp claims because you've got subpoenas and you're just showing up in court and your payments are delayed, and there's a lot of disincentive to ask the occupational questions sometimes.
I'm speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Raquel Rutledge, who has written about this in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, her article Gasping for Action. If inhaling diacetyl is known to be harmful, why is it being added to the so-called smoke juice cartridges used to flavor cigarettes, e-cigarettes? E-cigarettes are inhaled, aren't they?
They are inhaled,
so
yeah.
We're inhaling diacetyl?
Yes, that is true. It is allowed in them. There's very little regulation, as you know, about over e-cigarettes. The FDA right now has a proposal in place as of last April, but that has not been approved yet. So as of now, there's very little regulation on e-cigarettes. And so diacetyl is included in, there was a survey done by a doctor in Greece who bought more than 150 samples of e-cigarettes from 7 different countries, from 36 different manufacturers, and he found that nearly 70% of the sweet-flavored ones. Diacetyl is used to not only impart a butter flavor, but also is used for sweetness and some fruit flavors, so strawberry, some sour apple, caramel, maple, vanilla. So it's used in a
butterscotch.
Lot of flavors. Butterscotch, absolutely. Like I said, caramel, maple. So he sampled 70%, and 70% of those samples turned up they did have diacetyl in them, even those that said they were diacetyl-free. So quite a few do of those types of flavors. And, you know, the industry is saying they're trying to move away from it. They're trying to get it out of there, but there's no enforcement of that.
If I bought an e-cigarette cartridge, would it list diacetyl as one of the ingredients?
It would, most often it would not. It's not required to be listed. It will say flavor. And within that flavor, you could have 30 different ingredients that make up 30 different components, chemicals that make up that flavor. And the industry has for a long time viewed that as proprietary information. That's their secret recipe. So it's very difficult to know whether you have diacetyl in your e-cigarettes.
And you note that some e-cigarette labels falsely claim that diacetyl has the safety approval of the Flavor and Extract Manufacturers Association. How
That's
can they
right.
get away with that?
That's really getting under that trade group's skin. It's true to the degree that it's been given the industry approval as safe to ingest in trace amounts as food. It has not been studied, and they are not endorsing it and saying it is safe to inhale. It's a completely different aspect of the, you know, it behaves very differently when you inhale it versus when you ingest it. So, yeah, they've written 50 cease and desist letters to companies saying stop using our stamp of approval on your labels because we haven't approved them to be inhaled. But there is a whether it's a misconception or not, there's a lot of controversy on these e-cigarettes and whether they're better than conventional tobacco cigarettes. And the science has yet to show that.
But even if they are better, ingesting diacetyl doesn't sound like a good idea. Let's get back to OSHA for a moment. You write, after more than a decade of studies detailing diacetyl's danger, the U.S. Occupational Health and Safety Administration has failed to issue regulations specifying what a safe level of exposure might be. Don't they know?
Well, NIOSH, again, going back to the CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, their research arm, NIOSH, is coming out, and they're supposed to do it this year, they say.
This year, they say.
They're recommended. Yeah, they've been talking about it. So 2011, they put out an idea, and then they had public comment on it for all these years. It just is it's a slow, cumbersome, long process for getting a chemical regulated. So that's why it was really interesting, because David Michaels, who is now the Assistant Secretary of Labor and oversees this area of OSHA, was in 2006, 2007, one of the most outspoken proponents of having diacetyl regulated. He was with Georgetown at the time, and he was one of 42 public health experts from around the country that was calling on OSHA back then to regulate this thing. So now here he is in the position. I talked with him a couple of weeks ago. I was so curious to hear his perspective now that he is in a position to actually do something about it. And I mean, his take on it now is that the whole system is broken.
He called it a regulatory whack-a-mole.
Yeah. I mean, it takes 10 to 15 years to get one to the science enough to have one chemical regulated. And then by then, the industry has moved on to some other substitute, which could be equally, if not more toxic, which is the case in the case of diacetyl. So he's looking at trying to figure out a way to overhaul the whole system on how they regulate worker exposure to chemicals. You know, we'll see how that goes. I mean, how long is that going to take? It's unclear. They've got a comment period open till April. Right now, and trying to figure out how they're going to proceed with that. But it's not a quick fix here.
Wouldn't just better air filtering help the factory workers? Forget about the people smoking the e-cigarettes. But if it's going to be used there, isn't it a matter of just taking it out of the air as quickly as possible?
Yeah, and taking it out in a proper way. There's certain horizontal versus vertical ventilation. You don't want it to come up, you know, by your face. If you can avoid that, you'd want to have it down. So there are, you know, are some costs involved with it, and some of the industries really lobby hard against it, just saying we're not using enough of it. We just don't use it often enough, or there isn't enough out there. But yeah, I mean, you could. That's the first thing you want to do is, you know, enclose it or ventilate it out, and then, like I said, the last resort is just to require respirators.
But you write about a case. Go ahead.
I was just going to say there are ways to deal with it and deal with it safely.
You write about a case in the 1990s involving the company Tastemaker. What was happening to some of its workers?
Yeah, so they had a cluster of cases back then, and they became aware of it, and they hired a consultant to come in and try to help with their respiratory protection plan. And they had that. That's where that 29-year-old worker ended up dying. And she hadn't worked there all that long. They hired some folks to come in there and try to tighten up their respiratory protection plan. But we had some transcripts and some depositions of court cases that came out later, you know, in 2006, interviewing, you know, the depositions from these consultants and workers that were working on that program that just said, hey, actually managers and the executives, top-level folks, were not really interested in actually resolving the problem. They were very worried about public perception and told them not to, you know, they felt like they were very restricted in what they could tell the workers. They were not allowed to use the word bronchiolitis obliterans.
They were forced to sign confidentiality agreements.
That's right, where they weren't even at trade shows when they could actually share this information with others in the industry to give them a warning and encourage them to, you know, take precautions. They weren't allowed to even talk about their cases then. So they had to get prior approval whenever they did. They, for the most part, were not allowed to discuss it, which is why, you know, I think it carried on and became, you know, cropped up in other areas. And the other thing, too, is that OSHA, back then, when the microwave popcorn workers were coming down with illness, they really focused, they really limited. It was always struck me as just so narrow-minded, because it was also limited to microwave popcorn, and then it then it broadened a little bit out to those that are working in the flavoring industry. But it never really expanded to the other food processing businesses, such as the coffee roasters. And they never did their emphasis program, which was, you know, trying to beef up inspections and work with the manufacturers to put precautions in place. They just limited it to that, knowing that their diacetyl is used in a much broader environment than just those two little groups that they focused on.
Before you go, just one more thing. A number of listeners have asked for specifics when it comes to e-cigarettes. They wonder which flavors are likely to have diacetyl. Is there any way to know?
There is no way to know, but we do. I can tell you for sure any of the coffee, the butterscotch, the caramels, the strawberry. I know for sure. I've seen it in the the cherry, the sour apple. You really truly don't know. It's in a lot of them. But there isn't a way for you to know. That is a problem.
Thank you so much for being on our show today. I've been speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Raquel Rutledge. Her story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel was Gasping for Action, all about diacetyl.
Thank you for your interest in the story.